Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
To date, the market had been, I'm going to say, held back. And of course, I'm not sitting there saying prices are cheap. I'm not saying prices are low. I'm not saying anything like that.
Josh Linville is vice president of fertilizer with StoneX.
But prices had continued to trail behind the all-time highs that we had set back just recent years, back in 2022. And a lot of that had to do with the market kind of keeping itself lowered by its own forces. And what I mean by that is basically demand has had a say. Grain prices have had a big say. And so prices haven't been skyrocketing, even though today's supply situation, globally speaking, is far, far worse than anything we've ever seen before. It supports all-time high pricing. We just haven't been there.
And again, global fertilizer markets remaining under significant pressure as supply disruptions continue to build. It's pushing prices higher, tightening availability. And the Strait of Hormuz is really where this is happening. It's been restricted for several weeks, limiting exports from major nitrogen-producing countries. And at the same time, China halting urea and phosphate exports, while European production remains below normal due to elevated natural gas cost. So demand is adding to the strain, and India entering the market with a large urea purchase tender. It's increasing competition for available supply. U.S. fertilizer prices, particularly right now at the Gulf, remain below global replacement levels, but they are rising quickly. U.S. grain inspections led by strong corn movement last week, solid soybean demand, and steady wheat shipments. USDA data showing total export inspections reaching over 125 million bushels across major grains. Corn inspections totaling 79 million bushels, up from the prior week, well above last year's shipments spread across multiple destinations. That includes Japan, Mexico, and Colombia. Bean inspections reaching roughly 28.6 million bushels. China remains the key buyer, accounting for a large share of shipments through both Gulf and Pacific Northwest ports. Additional demand coming in from Egypt, Mexico, and Southeast Asia. Wheat inspections near 12.3 million bushels, holding steady week to week. Demand coming from Latin America and Asia. And finally, sorghum inspections, 2.3 million bushels. China remains the primary destination. Data centers rapidly expanding into rural areas. It's raising new concerns about competition for land, water, and electricity. With ag operations, Texas A&M AgriLife economists say the impact will depend on how the facilities use local resources and how communities manage development. Texas emerging as a major hub with about 4 gigawatts of data center capacity already in place and nearly 8 gigawatts under construction. Large-scale facilities can span hundreds of acres and operate continuously, consuming as much electricity as a small city. And that demand could strain rural power systems. Year-round electricity use might drive higher rates and increase pressure on the grid, especially during peak summer irrigation periods. Land use has become another concern. It's Agriculture Today.
Purple Wave Auction remains the trusted leader in online equipment auctions. What makes the difference is you. You are part of our growing global community that continues to trust Purple Wave with the equipment that builds and feeds America. This trust placed in us by our community, from construction to ag producers and fleet drivers, brings great equipment opportunities to their next owners. Join the Purple Wave community today. PurpleWave.com.
Manage your risk and take advantage of opportunities with StoneX. Utilizing StoneX's global presence to provide the best in market intelligence, a vast portfolio of risk management and marketing products, and a team of brokers who specialize in working with those in agriculture, StoneX provides the resources you need to make the best possible decisions. Learn more about the StoneX Advantage. Call Donna Hughes at 214-613-1688. There's substantial risk to futures and options trading. Not all products are suitable for all producers.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
We had a jobs report on Friday.
Chief Commodities Economist with StoneX, Arlen Suderman.
While the market was largely in holiday mode for the Easter holiday, and it was a great jobs report. The Bureau of Labor Statistics reported that the economy created 178,000 jobs in March, with employment rate dipping to 4.3%. The private sector provided 186,000 of those new jobs. And for the first time in a while, there was a good distribution of where those jobs came from, reflecting an improving health in the jobs market. February now was revised down to 41,000, so that's just an ugly job report ahead of this one. Well, January was revised up by 34,000. Average hourly earnings were up just 0.2% on the month and 3.5% on the year. Yet the labor force participation rate fell to 61.9%, its lowest level since 1977, when you remove the pandemic years. Now, much of that's probably due to what's happening in immigration right now, reducing the size of the labor force. Nonetheless, it was a great report. This week, we're scheduled to get the PCE inflation data for February. That's delayed data, so less focus on that. But on Friday, we get consumer price index data for March. The latter is expected to show headline inflation jumping to 3.4%, largely due to the war and the escalation in energy prices, while core inflation that excludes food and energy rises to 2.7%. And of course, we do have a crop report coming out on Thursday, a WASDE crop report. That's being overshadowed by all these other headlines. We could see modest adjustments to residual corn and wheat and soybeans use as a result of the March 31 stocks report, while it could also bump its U.S. corn export target a bit higher. Soybean crush should go higher while exports slip lower. Other than that, we shouldn't see too many fireworks tied to this report, allowing the focus to shift increasingly to Midwest and Brazilian weather when war-related headlines aren't driving a price action. Problem is, war-related headlines have been driving much of the price action. The next 36 hours will be critical for the energy and food-based commodities. A peace agreement likely removes some of the war premium, while escalation generates more upfront demand for these commodities in the cash market. Now, what we're looking at here is the risk that we could see more hoarding of these commodities if we continue to see this war escalate going forward. Near term right now, while we wait, we seem to be seeing somewhat of a lid on the food-based commodities right now, particularly the grains, as we see increased selling against the rallies when they happen. Part of that is because U.S. corn and wheat is getting overpriced in the world right now with ample competitive supplies. The U.S. corn market had pretty well owned the world supply for quite a while, but now Argentine corn is coming onto the market. And so that gives buyers some options there, and that's making it tougher to be able to go forward. Furthermore, the Brazil crop, which is in the early stages of pollination right now, it's a farina corn crop, is looking good. There are concerns about dryness, but also rains in the forecast. And right now, for the most part, the crop looks good. So farmers are selling into this rally. Not overly so, but we're still seeing some of that happen. They're keeping on a fairly normal pace as far as selling goes. So that's kind of providing a lid. If these things escalate more, we see energy prices escalate more, that could pull things higher. But overall, right now, we seem to be in a sideways to even weaker mode.
It's Agriculture Today.
If you're going to succeed, you need cotton that's strong enough to perform around here where you grow. That's why Delta Pine cotton varieties are bred to meet the needs of your neck of the woods and are rigorously evaluated by local growers for maximum performance potential and consistency year after year. Strong cotton performance starts around here with locally tested Delta Pine cotton. Learn more at DeltaPine.com. Read and follow pesticide label directions, grain marketing, and other stewardship practices.
Let's talk about cotton research. Cotton Incorporated funds more than 400 ag research projects every year. They study cotton, engineering, economic development, entomology, agronomy, pathology, variety selection, expanded cotton seed uses. And that's just the start. You grow the cotton research and promotion program helps grow the value. Learn more at cottonboard.org.
This is Agriculture Today.
As you move into, regardless of what are the government programs, maybe you're a veteran, maybe you're going into Social Security, login.gov is going to be your initial platform to be able to access all those benefits that you'll be able to receive across the board.
Dan Hunter is the state executive director for the Texas Farm Service Agency.
And then, of course, once you get in there, you'll be able to go to your FSA file, be able to update those things. So the One Big Beautiful Bill gave us a kind of a foundation to start doing some of this stuff. Of course, we're going to see what's going to come out of the Farm Bill here in the near future. And I know the Secretary and the President's working closely with Congress to hopefully get some stuff done that will, again, continue to benefit the farmer, make the farmer first out there.
The Departments of Agriculture and Interior have recently announced plans to formalize collaboration between the two agencies when it comes to grazing on public lands. Shelby Hagenauer, Senior Director of Government Affairs for the American Farm Bureau, said these plans were announced via a memorandum of understanding.
So they're focused on making vacant allotments available for use, more efficient National Environmental Policy Act permitting processes, having agency staff spend part of their training on actual ranches to better understand the daily lives of ranchers, and really seeking to implement a goal of no net loss of animal unit months within allotments, among other things.
She said public lands grazing is a valuable partnership between ranchers and federal agencies to manage millions of acres of western lands.
Ranchers are out on that land daily. They act as fire lookouts and often first responders. And livestock grazing is a proven method of fuels reduction to prevent wildfires. Grazing helps address invasive grasses and issues in the ground. And also, these ranches are a critical part of their local rural communities and economies.
Hagenauer said the next step for farmers and ranchers is to look out for updated grazing regulations that are currently going through the federal review process.
Those will likely be released for public comment in the next few months, so ranchers should be ready to provide written feedback about the proposal. Also, BLM just put out an online tool for reviewing vacant BLM, Forest Service, and National Wildlife Refuge allotments. Both of these efforts by the administration are really welcomed and appreciated by our rancher members.
The Environmental Protection Agency released the long-awaited renewable volume obligations for blending renewable fuels in 2026 and 2027. Brian Glenn, Director of Government Affairs for the American Farm Bureau Federation, said the new numbers provide some very good news for U.S. agriculture.
They included record high obligations for those blending requirements. So that essentially means for the American farmer that will help drive increased demand for our crops. And this also helps spur development of additional domestic processing capacity for these homegrown biofuels.
Farmers are facing significant economic challenges, and this action should help bolster the farm economy by driving strong domestic demand for crops.
A strong renewable fuel standard with these record high renewable volume obligations does just that. It increases domestic demand for our American grown crops. And this means additional support and resources and money in the farmer's pocket.
He said Congress can further support the farm economy by quickly passing year-round E15.
This is immediate fix. It should be something that we can get done and relatively quickly get support and additional domestic demand drivers to farmers. If year-round E15 gets passed by Congress, it can lead to an additional 2.4 billion bushels of corn per year in demand.
Chad Smith, Washington.
It's Agriculture Today.
This is Ben Scott, Scott Land Company in Dimmitt, Texas. We have literally at Scott Land Company sold thousands of acres of irrigated land, dry land, and CRP in Texas, New Mexico, Oklahoma, and Colorado. Look at our website, scottlandcompany.com. Give us a call at 800-933-9698. That'll get Ben Scott. We really need listings on all types of property.
The planting season is right around the corner. You can't afford to be down when it's time to go. Wiley Implement and Spray Center, your Case IH dealer, can get your equipment ready for the season and keep you running. We also have a great selection of new and used planters for the upcoming season. Depend on Wiley's 13 locations across Texas and Oklahoma. Find us at WileySprayers.com.
I'm Scott Wiley. We'll try hard to earn your business, but even harder to keep it. That's it. That's all.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
Iran believes that its primary weapon to use, so to speak, at this point, with its Navy sitting at the bottom of the ocean, its Air Force essentially destroyed, its best time is its best weapon that it has right now. Because the longer it can keep the Strait of Hormuz closed, the more pain it can inflict on the global economy.
Arlen Suderman is chief commodities analyst with StoneX.
The more it can create the possibility of the world turning on Israel and the United States. It also believes time is on its side from the standpoint of U.S. Even though the U.S. is hurt less than Asia and Europe by this, it still is feeling the pain, and we'll get critical inflation data for the month of March at the end of the week. And if the consumer, the voter, I should say, in the United States turns on Trump ahead of the midterm elections, that too curtails his power if he loses Congress in the midterms. And so Iran would like to see this prolonged as long as possible. Now, Israel noted that it attacked Iran's South Pars petrochemical complex today. With Iran's news agency reporting explosions at the facility. Israel had previously hit the South Pars gas field in March before President Trump asked that it avoid critical energy infrastructure. It was at that time that Iran had really stepped up attacks on surrounding countries' energy infrastructure. Any energy infrastructure damaged could take up to several years to repair after the war is over, depending on the scope of the damage. That raises risk for prolonged global shortfalls in energy, but natural gas from facilities also a primary feedstock for the region's critical fertilizer production that it exports around the world. Add to that that over the weekend we saw, I believe it was on Saturday, India announced that it was tendering for a large 2.5 million metric tons of urea fertilizer. Apparently, it is concerned about the risk of fertilizer prices going higher, not lower. And you significantly add to the global demand side of the ledger at a time when supply is significantly curtailed. And that resulted in another price spike in global fertilizer prices over the weekend. Should be noted that our sources indicate that Israel avoided hitting the petrochemical company itself, but rather it targeted companies that provide electricity, water, and oxygen to the facilities. In other words, Israel was sending a message that it has the capacity and the capability to do more, but it showed restraint against hitting the actual critical gas infrastructure at this time. Again, the next 36 hours will prove to be critical for this war to either ratchet down or to escalate, with a lot at stake for energy and fertilizer prices and for the global economy as a whole. Should be noted that we had one official from the United Arab Emirates, I believe it was, who stated that if the Strait of Hormuz is not reopened as part of any deal, that risk of a broader escalation in the region of the war. I read that to mean that some of Iran's Arab neighbors are getting fed up enough with Iran's hits on them that they're ready to join this war against Iran if, in fact, this doesn't soon wind down with the strait reopened. That's hurting them so significantly from a revenue standpoint. Their economies are built on that oil revenue and, to some extent, fertilizer revenue, which is not flowing now with the strait closed.
It's Agriculture Today.
Purple Wave Auction remains the trusted leader in online equipment auctions. What makes the difference is you. You are part of our growing global community that continues to trust Purple Wave with the equipment that builds and feeds America. This trust placed in us by our community, from construction to ag producers and fleet drivers, brings great equipment opportunities to their next owners. Join the Purple Wave community today. PurpleWave.com.
Manage your risk and take advantage of opportunities with StoneX. Utilizing StoneX's global presence to provide the best in market intelligence, a vast portfolio of risk management and marketing products, and a team of brokers who specialize in working with those in agriculture, StoneX provides the resources you need to make the best possible decisions. Learn more about the StoneX Advantage. Call Donna Hughes at 214-613-1688.
There's substantial risk to futures and options trading. Not all products are suitable for all producers.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
So I think one of the things or a question that often comes up as a topic of discussion is, you know, how different grains react to processing. Why do we process feed grains, right?
Kansas State beef cattle specialist, Dr. Justin Wagner.
You know, oftentimes there's kind of some surprises as we start to talk about how different grains respond to different types of processing. And so if we think about, you know, feedlot growing and background in rations, there's a variety of different grains that are utilized, right? So corn, sorghum, even some wheat occasionally. But then within that, there's different processing methods. So, you know, steam flaking grains is very common here in the western half of the state. On some smaller operations or grower backgrounder operations, a lot of times we'll not necessarily utilize steam flakers or steam flake products, but they'll use dry rolled grains, right, that have either been processed through a mill and maybe that's done on farm. We also have, high moisture in silage of those grains. So high moisture grains, high moisture corn. And so those are all different processing methods that are utilized in the industry. And so, you know, one of the simple questions that we get is, well, why do we process grains? And so the simple answer is to increase the available energy. And a lot of times that's related to the availability of the starch. That starch component is really one of the primary energy sources within those different types of grains. And so, you know, really with this article, we were trying to address that question of, well, where do different grains within different processing methods really kind of rank? And so some of the differences that we'll talk about here are really a function of how the starch is packaged within those grain kernels. And then some factors like the seed coat. Sorghum is really kind of the great example. It's kind of one of our grains that's maybe a little more challenging to process because of the berry size with sorghum, but also it has a very dense seed coat. And also we have a starch matrix inside that kernel of sorghum that's also very tightly packed, if you think about that, relative to maybe a more softer grain like wheat or even corn to some extent. So as we kind of talk about those different grains and where they rank in terms of processing, a lot of these differences in terms of how they respond to processing is ultimately a function of the physiological characteristics of that seed coat, like on those grains. And so, you know, if we think about, you know, as we kind of go from in terms of starch availability and starch breakdown in the rumen, some of the slowest grains that we would see in terms of how they break down the rumen would be our whole shell grains. So whole sorghum, whole shell corn. And then as we move up the ladder in terms of availability, that's where we get to dry rolled corn, high moisture and reconstituted grains would be next up the list in terms of starch availability. Then we get into steam flaked grains like steam flaked sorghum, steam flaked corn. High moisture corn is also in that same category. So many times we can see similar starch availabilities on high moisture corn and steam flaked corn. So that's why you'll see many operations that do not have access to a flaker will oftentimes utilize high moisture corn and put that up in a bunker as a means of increasing the starch breakdown and energy available within that grain. Then we move into some of the fastest grains in terms of how they're degraded in the rumen. Those would actually be steamrolled wheat and barley. So as we think about how the physiological characteristics of the seed coat of wheat versus sorghum or corn, right? We've got a softer grain. We've got a softer endosperm. And because of that starch matrix that's fairly soft, that increases that starch availability. And so actually dry rolled wheat and barley are some of the most rapidly fermentable grains in terms of starch availability within the rumen. And so a lot of times that's a bit of a surprise that dry rolled wheat actually has a higher rate of starch breakdown in the rumen than what steam flaked corn does.
It's Agriculture Today.
If you're going to succeed, you need cotton that's strong enough to perform around here where you grow. That's why Delta Pine cotton varieties are bred to meet the needs of your neck of the woods and are rigorously evaluated by local growers for maximum performance potential and consistency year after year. Strong cotton performance starts round here with locally tested Delta Pine cotton. Learn more at DeltaPine.com. Read and follow pesticide label directions, grain marketing, and other stewardship practices.
Let's talk about cotton research. Cotton Incorporated funds more than 400 ag research projects every year. They study cotton, engineering, economic development, entomology, agronomy, pathology, variety selection, expanded cotton seed uses. And that's just the start. You grow the cotton research and promotion program helps grow the value. Learn more at cottonboard.org.
This is Agriculture Today.
But as we look at the export lines, and like I say, I think they're the key to continuing to see higher prices, at least as we care over the springtime.
Dr. Chad Hart is an Iowa State University ag economist looking at the opportunities for exports.
We continue to see those international sales sort of chugging along at, let's call it a normal pace to, in the case of corn, a little bit above normal. As we look here at the soybean market, you can see here that right now we're approaching 1.4 billion bushels being already marketed through the export chain. That is significantly below our normal. We should be up about 400 million bushels more, up there about 1.8 billion bushels. But we are moving at a sort of seasonal pace here. A lot of the movement over the past couple of months has been watching what's been going on with China. We had seen them come into the market fairly significantly over the past few months. That pace has slowed down recently, but we are seeing other markets chip in here as well to get us back to a, let's call it a normal pace, even though we're below average when we look at it in total. When we're looking at the corn side, on the other hand, we're continuing to chug along at a strong pace, a little bit stronger than normal, and given where we started the year, yeah, we continue to see basically record sales on down the line. So far, we're up there around 2.6 billion bushels already marketed this way. Again, we're targeting 3.3 billion by the end of the year, and the growth we're seeing here is across the board. It is in Latin America, Asia, Europe, and so it has continued to support a very strong pull here from the international markets, helping us work through the large supplies of U.S. corn that we have.
But what about demand here at home? State biofuel tax credits can affect markets. Bree Botts is a grain and oilseed analyst with Terrain.
States can also have their own biofuel tax credit policies, which can differ from federal policy, but be stacked with 45Z, California's Low Carbon Fuel Standard, or LCFS program, to reduce the CI of transportation fuels is a credit system rather than direct volume mandate is really what drove the renewable diesel boom that began in 2021. The nation's largest consumer of renewable diesel, California, seeks to reduce carbon emissions by 30% in 2030 and 90% by 2045 from the 2010 levels, according to the California Air Resources Board, or CARB. Today, CARB manages the LCFS and estimates nearly 70% of diesel utilization is from renewable diesel. California still includes the indirect land use charge penalty in its version of carbon emission calculations, resulting in higher CI scores and lower associated tax credits for land-based feedstocks like soy oil. The state also does not have a feedstock import restriction, meaning foreign UCO and tallow will likely continue to be utilized in the state, eroding soy oil's renewable diesel market share. For example, the CI score for soy oil feedstocks is nearly 2.5 times UCO's and 1.5 times higher than tallow's, which directly influences the tax credit amount and therefore feedstock purchase decisions from biofuel producers. In California, the LCFS tax credit on UCO is nearly 3 times as high as soy oil, and tallow is nearly double. Importantly, effective July 1st, 2025, California will restrict vegetable oil feedstock use and biofuel production to 20%, with existing pathways exempt through 2027.
And this is Agriculture Today.
This has been Scott, Scott Land Company in Dimmitt, Texas. We have literally at Scott Land Company sold thousands of acres of irrigated land, dry land, and CRP in Texas, New Mexico, Oklahoma, and Colorado. Look at our website, scottlandcompany.com. Give us a call at 800-933-9698. That'll get Ben Scott. We really need listings on all types of property.
The planting season is right around the corner. You can't afford to be down when it's time to go. Wiley Implement and Spray Center, your Case IH dealer, can get your equipment ready for the season and keep you running. We also have a great selection of new and used planters for the upcoming season. Depend on Wiley's 13 locations across Texas and Oklahoma. Find us at WileySprayers.com.
I'm Scott Wiley. We'll try hard to earn your business, but even harder to keep it. That's it. That's all.